As I was saying, this tape ran out on the other side. We left out of Enid the second time on a Saturday, Sunday morning. And it was downright cold. It was just about 4 or 5 degrees above zero Fahrenheit yet. Wasn't snowing. Sun wasn't shining, however. And the snow up there where you knew there had been a blizzard. We got to a first town out of Enid, which was about 40 miles away, and we were cold that we could hardly stand it any longer in this old car. There was no heater of any kind in it. So we stopped at a place we saw open there, sold gasoline. We filled it up with gasoline and got warm, getting warm before we left out again. So the Model T was just a one-seater. In other words, it was a roadster type. And in stripping it down and building the body on, it moved the gasoline tank into the what would be the trunk on the ordinary car today. And we had all of our luggage in there. And it was no small task to get gasoline into the thing. We left out of this place and proceeded on about 40 or 50 more miles, and we had a town called Cherokee, which was about 100 miles from home. And we stopped there and warmed up and proceeded to fill up with gasoline. So we warmed, got good and warm, and proceeded on to Alva. I thought we should get gasoline there because we knew we were using gasoline more than normal in that slick snow and whatnot. But boy, the other boys said, no, we shouldn't need any gasoline. We should get to home okay. Of course, the tank only held 9 gallons, and it should go a long ways on 9 gallons, particularly at 20 miles to the gallon. But I knew we weren't getting 20 miles to the gallon because wheels were slipping in the snow. We were driving right on practically glazed top tracks that snow piled up on each side up to about the hubcaps. And so we didn't unload our luggage and everything and get any gasoline at Alva. We journeyed on then, and we got in about a 3/4 of a mile of gate where the one boy lived, and she ran out of gasoline. So I told him, I said, well, you fellas walk on up and get it, and I'll stay here with the car and see if nobody runs into it. There's no way of getting it out of the tracks of the snow. So they took off, and I got out and raised the hood up against on the south side of it. What wind was blowing then was from the north. Raised that hood up for a windbreaker and got in there and set on the engine to keep warm while they were, and warm up while they were gone. So they walked the 3/4 of a mile and got up there to the filling station, and the fella called his father, and He came down to the filling station. They brought gasoline down and got it in. In the gate. And so this one boy that lived in Knowles, the next stop, he called his dad and he said, well, he'd come down the gate and get us, and not try to drive that old Model T on up there. So we stayed around the good warm fire in this first boy's home until he got there and started back. And boy, he let in on me. He says, why didn't you make that boy call me? He says, you're a responsible party. He says, you should have made him call me and let him know where we were. And says, I was worried all to pieces. He says, I've been trying to find you all day. And says, I even called your dad. And he says, well, he's past 18, almost 19 years old. And says, he knows enough to get in out of the cold and the snow if it's going to bother him. He said, I figured I'd find out all the details when he got home. He said, you ought to make this boy of mine call me. I said, well, sir, I couldn't make him do anything. And he said, well, you should have called me then, if he wouldn't, or called your folks or something. I said, well, as my dad says, he knew I didn't like snow and cold enough that I wouldn't do anything that would endanger me. And this other boy, and he says, yeah, Dad, don't get on him. He says, he's not like you are, his dad, and he's not like we are. We got on to their place, and I spent the night with the fella, and phoned my folks, and they came in and got me the next day. My dad says, what was with the no man Dixon? I said, oh, he got on me about not making his boy call home and tell him where we were. He says, well, I told him, I says, you're old enough and don't like snow and cold weather enough that you aren't going to get out and do anything that you're going to freeze to death or get in any trouble. And he said, we weren't worried about you at all. So we got home. The boy at the gate with the old Model T called up and he says, I got a chance to sell the thing for $35. You want to take it? Yep, let's take it. So he sold it for $35, and I hitchhiked back after I left out on the day before New Year's and hitchhiked back to Stillwater to get back to school. It only took me a matter of about 6 hours to hitchhike to get back there. The standard wages around the college for students working was 25 cents an hour. I had been doing various odd jobs like mowing lawns and wrapping under house pipes to keep from freezing during cold weather and various things like that to help pay my expenses in college. And when I got back, I'd had an application in for a job there in the college doing janitoring work. I had a janitoring job, but it paid me 50 cents a day, which was more than half of what it cost me to eat. We could eat in the college cafeteria easily on 65 to 70 cents a day. They produced most of their own food right there on the college farm. And you could get a quarter of a slice, being a quarter of a apple pie with a scoop of ice cream on it for 8 cents. And that was about the way things cost in that cafeteria. During that first quarter there in college, as I said, I enrolled in engineering and I'd take college algebra. The old professor in college algebra assigned us seats alphabetically. So there was only two of us with a name starting with the name G, and that was Chester Gould that created Dick Tracy. Was seated on my right, and he was taking college algebra for the fourth time. He flunked it the other three times, and he ended up flunking it that time. But he sat there in the algebra class and draw sketches most of the time. He, along towards the end of the quarter, he sat there one day and he drew a picture of a detective with an old Sherlock Holmes hat and everything like that. I said, "What's the detective for?" And he says, "That's to find my, to see if he can detect my algebra grade this time." Well, it wasn't high enough to pass him. He quit the school and went to Chicago, and I don't know whether he quit school or not right then or not. I don't believe he did. I think he came back the next two quarters, but he enrolled in journalism after that. And then the next year, I understand he went to Northwestern University and started working on a newspaper there, and while he was taking journalism at Northwestern University. And most of you know his history from that time with Dick Tracy. Dick Tracy is the man that he created as a detective while he was there in that algebra class. The only thing he changed was he gave him a hat that I have several of them now in the archives with bullet holes in them. So I can say that I saw Dick Tracy created. Where we had lived in the panhandle of Oklahoma and Beaver County, there weren't any Negroes living in that county at all. I didn't know anything about race prejudice. I didn't have any feelings one way or another about Negroes. Fact is, I didn't even know that they wouldn't let them ride in the train at the same cars as the white people. So there was quite a few Indians around where we were, and they were good people, and I had no prejudice against the Indians. At first, I was down enrolling the beginning of the first quarter there at college. There's a young Indian was in front of me in line, and long line, and we were slowly going through. And he and I became quite good friends. He was going to enroll in engineering. All freshmen took the same courses, same things, didn't specifically have anything you enrolled in engineering. You was just enrolled in engineering at the freshman year. Well, this young Indian says, I think we ought to go to church tomorrow. This was Saturday morning. And I said, well, what church you go to? He said, well, I was raised as a Methodist. And I said, well, I was too, so go down to this Methodist church down here tomorrow. And he says, good deal. So Sunday morning we met and dressed up. I met him where we decided to, and we went down to this church, and all you had to do is look at him and tell him he was an Indian. A couple ushers met us out on the front steps and stopped him and said he couldn't go in. They didn't allow Indians in that church. And they told me I could go on in. I said, well, if he can't go in, I can't either, because go way back, I've got a little Indian blood in me. Well, you don't have enough to bother. You're purely a white man. I said, well, if my friend here can't go in, I'm not going in either. So there was only one church in Stillwater about 2 miles away that found out that he could go into. That was a Negro church down on the outskirts of Stillwater. I think he might have went there a time or two, but I never entered a church door. And after that, in the 4 years I was in college there at Stillwater, I never entered the door of any of the churches there because of that incident that they wouldn't let my Indian friend in. As I said, I hitchhiked back after a very enjoyable Christmas at home, and I hitchhiked back to Stillwater for the starting of the second quarter. Found I had this job, which took me a little less than 2 hours, but I got paid for 2 hours, 50 cents. And I found a few other small jobs to do to help me save some of my cash that I had stored up. And enjoyed living in the dormitory. The boy from Knowles came back, and we roomed together the rest of that year in that new dormitory. Just before, there wasn't too many people staying in the dormitory at that time. It was only about half full. So there was a bachelor professor of agriculture that was rooming next door to us. And so one day the house mother that was hired by the college, lived in the dormitory to keep an eye on we boys, and called me into her office, and she says, you know, call this professor's name. I said, yes'm. says he's had a gun stolen. I says, a gun? Why do you have a gun? And the college book that we studied before we came here very specifically said no student could have a gun on campus. How come a professor can have a gun? Well, he says, I don't think it's right, but he had one that was stolen, a 45 Colt automatic. And said he thought you got it. He said he went out of his room to the shower bath one day and left his door open. And he said he, out of the window of the shower bath, why, he saw you come in and didn't hear your door closed for quite a little while after you come in. He said he went back and found his gun gone. Well, I says, I haven't got his gun. I didn't want, I don't need a gun, don't want one. I said, I wouldn't know how to use it if I had it. I said, the Army was teaching, the ROTC was teaching us how to use the 45 Colt automatic, and I never thought much of them as a piece to have around. And I don't like it a bit that that guy thought I stole it. She said, well, I don't blame you. And so we, towards the end of the third quarter, getting ready to go home, a fellow from Beaver City out in the Panhandle, Beaver County, that I'd known while I was going to high school at Forgan, came to me and he says, I got an old car over in Tulsa, an old Model T Ford. He says, my folks are coming by and they're taking me on a trip. And he said, we won't come back by here. He said, would you drive that old car for me home? And I said, well, my folks have moved to Woodward. I said, I'll take it that far. He said, well, that's good. He said, we'll come back through Woodward. And that's on our schedule, on my folks' schedule, when we get back off of this trip, is to come through Woodward. And that is about 100 miles from Woodward to Beaver City. It was that much closer to Stillwater than it was Beaver City, and was from Beaver City too. So I said, okay, we'll take her, this boy from Gate and the boy from Knowles. We started out, well, I had to go to Tulsa and get the car. Another fellow and I hitchhiked to Tulsa and got the old car over one weekend. And we took out in the thing, go home after school closed the third quarter. We were going along, had all of our stuff piled into the back end of this old Model T Touring without a top on it. And one of us set up on that stuff while the other two, one drove and one sat in the front seat. We're going along across the prairie out there, western Oklahoma, all at once, boom! And I was happened to be driving. The boy was sitting from Gate was sitting beside me. He jumped up. What was that? Flat tires? No. Looked around and this kid from Knowles, he was sitting there laughing. I had the 45 Colt automatic in his hand. I said, where'd you get that gun? He said a week or so ago, he said another fellow and I, he named this other fellow, which I've forgotten the name of now, said he came to me one day and says, we was having class together, and he says, I've got a car here, he said, and I got a date with a girl. We'll go car riding, which was strictly against the rules of the college. And he says, would you, says she's got a roommate that she wants to take along, though. He says, do you want to go along with a date with a roommate? I told him, okay. So he came by and picked me up. We drove out in the country and out on an isolated road and stopped. And it was about a mile and a half out of Stillwater. And he stopped. And he propositioned this gal, and she says, listen, you, I'm not that kind of a girl. I'm a virgin. I expect to stay a virgin. And he hauled out this automatic and scare this girl into doing what he wanted to, and I knocked it out of his hand and took it away from him, and the two girls and I got out, and we walked back to the college, let him go on, and he said, I'm sure that this is the gun that was stolen from that guy next door to me there, next door to us, and accused you of taking it, and I just decided I wouldn't give it back to him. I said, well, don't go shooting it off around here. It was scaring us to death. About 2 weeks after we got home, after I got back to Woodward, people came by, and this boy picked up his old Model D, and I couldn't find any work around Woodward, so I went up to wheat harvesters, beginning to get going up in Beaver County. Worked some wheat harvest, and thrashing started. And I started working for a thrashing crew, carrying drinking water for the men and running errands like that. I had the old Model T Ford that I went through high school with, and I'd keep the drinking cans full of cool water and some ice. Very little ice in it because ice water wasn't too good, just to keep it cool and for the men to drink. And when I wasn't doing that, I'd pitch wheat off the stacks into the feeder to the thrash machine. And in about 2 or 3 days, my hands were so blistered I couldn't hold a pitchfork, and I just told them that I didn't have to do that. So I went into Forgan, went into Ford Garage to get something for the old Model T, I think a new timer. And the owner of the garage says, what are you doing now? I said, nothing. He says, well, we need somebody to set up these new cars we're getting in here. New Model T's. And he said, I think you could do it in good shape, so get in there and get to work. Well, I made my wages there were more money than it was paying me out of pitching the wheat, and the hours were shorter. And the only difference, I had to feed myself, which wasn't too bad. I could eat pretty well on a dollar to a dollar and a quarter a day in the restaurants there, and making $6 a day, so that wasn't a bit bad. Only got $5 a day in my board of pitching wheat to that thrash machine, which was a man-killing work. Along just after the 1st of July, one morning I woke up with a whistle blowing, and I could see something was afire, so the garage burned down. Several new cars in it, and several cars in storage in there. And the only thing to do, finally, the garage owner's boy got there, and he and I drug a hose around and turned it into a